This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So I guess it only took just a couple radio segments and a blog post to get a defiant prosecutor to finally give in and acknowledge that, yeah, he screwed up. There were some significant errors in judgment. So we talked about this last week on my show. We noticed that the social media posts from Greg Banks started to become blank. He was actually, it turns out, deleting those previous posts. And then, of course, he would put out an apology. Greg Banks is the elected Island County prosecutor. And up until last week, his public and personal Facebook page was littered with like thousands of vulgar, vicious smears against conservative voters and against President Donald Trump. Now, it's one thing to criticize Donald Trump, though I'll say the number and the way he was talking about it, just it was unhinged. It's one thing to go after him. It's another thing to go so actively after voters, including voters in your own neck of the woods, because he called out Trump supporters as members of the KKK. He called them, quote, racist bullies with second grade intellects and behavior disorders. Now, when you do something like that, you do it with such great severity and consistency. Maybe someone who lives in your district might say, oh, are you going to treat me fairly if I, for whatever reason, have to go and deal with you? And of course, there are the people who work with Greg Banks directly, who might be conservatives, who might have been Trump supporters, now wondering, wow, is it safe for me to even acknowledge that I'm a Republican or a Trump supporter in front of someone who very clearly has so little respect for conservative voters? And so he originally, when we reached out to him, he declined an interview, but he sent a rather lengthy statement that you can get at KTTH.com, and he defended what it was that he was doing, saying in part, those are my personal views and have no bearing on how we make prosecutorial decisions. Okay, fair enough. But then after we talked about it, and I remember saying it on air as we were doing it in the 5 o'clock hours, like, I've noticed all of a sudden that his Facebook page is completely blank. What's going on? Well, he was taking all the posts down. And at the same time, he was emailing members of his staff to apologize for his post, saying that he had done something pretty stupid. It went on to say, quote, that I was unable to see the harm my post may cause to our reputation is more than embarrassing to me. Now, the South would be record. They were the first to report on this apology. And they break down parts of this email, again, are up at KTTH.com. But they say he says he was wrong to criticize the president's supporters with, quote, sharp-tongued rhetoric that fails to acknowledge that many of them are, quote, rational and thoughtful. Oh, gee, thanks. He went on to say, I engage in the same behavior I criticized the president and his administration for. I was criticizing a stereotype of the president's supporters and did not intend to direct it at any individual, let alone my friends, family, or colleagues, which again was kind of weird because in his statement to me, he kind of acknowledges that he doesn't understand why his friends, family, or colleagues are supporters of Trump. But he then goes on to say, look, I still maintain I don't treat conservatives any differently in my office. And you know what? Just to be fair, I've asked anyone with concerns to either speak directly with me, to go directly to the office administration, or go to one of the chief deputies or even human services or human resources if you need to. So he said moving forward, he's not going to insult Trump supporters anymore and said he's just going to voice his discontent with Trump. And for the most part, he's living up to that promise. This is a good outcome. If you're going to be in an elected office where you have tremendous power, legally speaking, over individual constituents, I don't think you should be going crazy calling out at least a portion of your constituency as racist, crazy people, because then there's a clear conflict of interest. Can you truly treat someone equally under the law if you hold such a bad view of them? And it's the same thing if he was going out against President Obama. This is not something I generally think is appropriate. Imagine working for someone like this. Imagine literally being a conservative, working for a guy who's posting memes indicating that because you voted for Trump, you are a KKK member. You're no better than he. That's alarming. And this is the exact type of thing that we need to highlight. And this shows you, by the way, the power of this show, the power of our blog, the power of you guys, because you helped put this story all over social media. I sent out a couple tweets. You guys did all the work. I didn't have to do that much. So help me now shine a spotlight on this. This is a good outcome. And it also sends a message to any other elected official that, you know what, stop talking down against your constituents, regardless of politics. It's wrong. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll go ahead and send you a link to the story so you can read yourself, but also post on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. Email it to friends and family. Let's put a spotlight on it. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. This is not just a story about Island County. This can very easily happen literally anywhere across Washington State. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The environment.
So there's this deadly disease threatening bats in Kittitas County, and it has some environmental concerns, none of which I care about because bats are gross and scary and I hope they all die. I'm sorry, but that's just how I feel. Not Batman, because I mean, that was the only good thing that came out of bats was the creation of Batman, who's not really a superhero, but you know, whatever.
Rich guy in a suit. But yeah, he's my favorite.
They're just awful. Bats are so gross. And now they're apparently, in Kittitas County at least, they're dealing with something called white nose syndrome, which is different from brown nose syndrome, which is something that a lot of employees at a lot of places of business tend to suffer from. This is apparently often fatal for hibernating bats. The disease is spread by fungus and has previously been found in King, Pierce, and Lewis counties. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Communications Manager Rachel Blomker tells King 5 why this is so significant.
We've seen just huge devastation in eastern states when it comes to white nose syndrome, where it can eliminate up to 100% of a colony.
Good.
They provide us free pest control services. And so in the United States, the numbers are around $3 billion, with a B, dollars every year that bats provide pest control services to farmers.
It always comes down to free labor. It's just, oh, they do it for free. They eat all the bugs and stuff, and that's better for all of us. Here's the deal. I don't go outside all that often. I'm not a big hiker or anything. I'd rather go to a movie and stay indoors. I don't care if there's a little bit more bugs out because we got rid, because the bats aren't available. I can't stand it. The good news is the disease doesn't affect humans. It doesn't affect livestock. It doesn't affect any wildlife, according to King 5. I'll deal with the increase in bugs. And by the way, speaking of which, right now is the time of year where I generally go home, I'll spot a spider, I'll scream like a girl, then feel really sad that I live alone and have no one who loves me who can then go ahead and take care of the spider that I just saw. And instead, I'll just like try to shoo it out the door, or in most cases, get a cup, miss putting the cup over the spider, then worrying that the spider is now particularly pissed off at me and I can't lose any track of it because then it's going to attack me in my sleep. I'm very neurotic. So lots of spiders are out there right now. I'm told we shouldn't be really, really concerned with this. There's a reason why a lot of spiders are out there. Apparently, they don't have access to, like, spider grinder or spider Tinder. They're literally cruising for sex. This is not me. This is what the experts say. Rod Crawford is the curator of some stupid thing at the Burke Museum about spiders, and he tells King 5, this is not a risk to any of us. They're looking for a little action.
I've never known one of these to bite anyone at any time, anywhere, for any reason. The males, like this guy, become sexually mature. And the sexually mature males have just one purpose in life, cruising for chicks.
Which, by the way, is kind of like most heterosexual men as well, if we're going
to
be honest.
Advice to someone who sees a house spider walking across their floor is just wave as it goes by.
I feel like I'm more alarmed now than I was before, because I'm presuming that there's not that many spiders available in my particular apartment. So do I want a sexually repressed, like pent up, angry, aggressive spider that's hanging out looking for not getting anything? Do I really want that in my apartment? And I feel like it's going to take out its aggression on me.
You think that spider's coming after you?
I mean, at some point it's going to come after me. It's not finding what it wants. Because if I do find a spider, I'm going to, again, I'll try to kill it as quickly as possible or shoo it out of the house and let it bother somebody else. I don't find many spiders. I'll find a spider, a single spider, and it's not finding anything.
And that's one spider is on the search.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not going to find anything else because there's no other spider in my... I've never seen two spiders out at once. I suppose it's possible I've seen two individual spiders because it's not like I can tell the difference. I'm just saying they're not... There's not a lot in my apartment.
I don't think
so. We just got
worried.
A horny spider just prancing around trying to find sex, and it's not going to find it in my apartment. No one's finding any sort of human interaction of the sexual kind in my apartment, human or otherwise. And so let's just get the stupid spider Get it, go away. We need to come up with an app for these things. And by the way, what about the gay spiders? It's all very heteronormative. They're all like, oh, they're just looking for a mate. But then, and the way he presented it's, oh, it's only looking for a lady, chicks. That's wrong.
You should get on the app game for spiders.
What is it?
Get on the app game. Come on, you need to invent this app.
I mean, there's already, because everything ends in E-R or just R. It's a spider. It's a spiderer. I don't.
Spiderer.
And I suppose they can't go on Bumble because they're scared of bees. Don't bees kill? Oh, no. Do they kill? Who kills what? Bees get stuck in the web.
Yeah, so spiders probably kill bees. You got, there's some web puns that you could probably use
I'm
to make
sure, an app. But none of those are appropriate for the radio, because don't believe me, I've thought of plenty when I was reading the story. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. You know, shout out to the 253 in this text message. Fun fact, you eat an average of 8 spiders in your sleep during a year. I really appreciate you reminding me of that factoid. Really do. I'm going to have no problems whatsoever tonight getting to bed. Thank you. So now it's horny spiders and then spiders that want to go into my mouth while I'm sleeping. Or even not even just my mouth. It could be my nose. It could be my ear. I could go on. But instead, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So there are a lot of hot takes from this weekend's mass shooting in Texas. And that, of course, brings us to...
It's time for the dumbest tweet of the day.
Yeah. Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island is the winner today. He tweeted, "Call me crazy, but I think it should be harder to buy an AR-15 than it is to buy Sudafed."
And that was the dumbest tweet of the day.
Pretty stupid. To help us dispel the dumb myth that you can easily buy an AR-15, but Sudafed a little bit too hard, Tiffany Teasdale joins us on the line. She's the owner of Linwood Gun and Ammo. Tiffany, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's David Cicilline makes it sound really easy. I can just walk in and get an AR-15 from you, right?
No.
What?
No, you can't. I know it's weird.
But he just told me it's because I've tried to buy Sudafed, and I had to give my ID when I have it with the special kind behind the pharmacy, and then they give it to me, and it usually takes about 30 seconds or so. So it's, what? So take us through then. How does someone buy an AR-15?
Well, and I remember last time when I bought Sudafed, too, you can only buy one pack every couple days, right?
Yeah, oh,
but
gosh.
But with guns, I mean, it must be unlimited or something. But no, it's kind of silly. I mean, we do the background check. There's a full federal document that people have to fill out. We verify their ID with the information that they wrote on the document. We send it off to the local police department because under the new law, the background check is completed by the local police department, and they have 10 business days to give us a response. And on the 11th business day, the customer will be able to come in and take possession of it. So they have 10 days to do a full investigation of their entire background to make sure that they are eligible to have a firearm.
But it's not just with an AR-15, right? I can go in and get an AK-47 fully automatic, though.
Well, unfortunately, in this state, you can't have a fully automatic firearm.
But Beto O'Rourke... So now Congressman O'Rourke is lying?
Yeah, it's weird.
I know. So obviously, it's ludicrous the way people talk about guns. And it kind of feels like they either have never gone through the process or haven't bothered to learn, or they're just flat out lying.
Yeah, we see a lot of these congressmen and congresswomen that are all coming out and preaching gun safety. I even saw some on the news today. Everybody was talking about AR-15s are to blame. It's really the person. It's the person that's behind it. It's not necessarily even what I would think is a mental issue of any kind. It could be just that somebody is just, they're just stupid.
So what from your perspective as a gun owner, because obviously you're doing whatever you can to make sure a bad guy doesn't gain access to a gun, but you're also making sure that people who just give you kind of weird vibes don't have access to a gun.
Oh, absolutely. We've stopped several gun sales because of a weird vibe. We all have a natural spidey sense, and we've learned over the years to really harness it and understand it. And we're not going to just deny somebody just because. We'll request a background and ask for extra background checks for somebody. And I'm not sure if it ever gets done, but occasionally we'll come back and get a denial. But even then, sometimes you just don't feel comfortable giving somebody a gun, and we have the right to say no. And we've exercised that rights a few times, and one of them actually saved somebody's life because of it.
Explain that.
We had a gal that was trying to commit suicide.
Wow.
And we got the spidey sense on it, so we chose not to give her a gun. And fortunately, she thought better and decided that that's what she was going to do and informed us of that. And we were very happy to give her a full refund.
Yeah, wow. That's insane. How often does something like that happen?
It occasionally happens. It's not often. Unfortunately, it does happen. Sometimes we find out about it. People will make up a full story and make us believe this whole thing that they were afraid for their life and they have personal protection orders against people. And they have other people that just say there's a lot of break-ins in the neighborhood, which there have been a lot more lately. We've been seeing a lot more home invasions. And people will make up huge stories, and they are really convincing, and you have no idea. The next thing you know, you have law enforcement showing up asking to review your cameras because they need to see what the person was wearing, or they need to see what the person looked like in their actions and how they might have been talking to our employees. But unfortunately, we can't catch them all, but we sure do try.
Well, the other talking point that I heard over the weekend is that we're selling weapons of war. Do you have any weapons of war that you sell?
Not that I'm aware of.
AR-15s aren't used in war?
I guess, maybe in a similar style and fashion, but I don't have any tanks here either.
Yeah. What do you think drives a lot of this? Is it just fear-mongering? Is it understandable for you? I mean, obviously, you're not immune to some of the criticism that you're allowing people to purchase guns in a way that's a little bit too easy in their view, despite the fact that you go through this long process.
You know, I think a lot of it is just the unknown, and I think it's part of politics. Somebody got a wild hair one day that decided that they were going to attack just a firearm. They don't attack vehicles when they go on sidewalks and crash into a bunch of people. They don't blame alcohol when it's somebody who has a DUI and kills a bunch of people. But they always blame guns.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really understanding how they got there, but somehow they're there. But we just need to get them off of that track and understand that it's the person that's behind the trigger.
Tiffany Teasdale is the owner of Linwood Gun and Ammunition. If you want to learn more about their business, if you want to shop there, go to linwoodguns.com, linwoodguns.com. Tiffany, as always, thank you so much for lending us your expertise. Really do appreciate it.
Of course, anytime.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So this is insane. Over the weekend at Discovery Park in Seattle, a tree just fell on the delivery truck. And it partially crushed it. Now, the good news is the driver's okay, obviously a little bit shaken up as to what happened, but the driver's fine. And so let's make it so that we're all kind of spooked out and not really fine. Arborist Steve Lambert tells Cairo 7 TV that this is going to keep happening over and over and over again.
It had what are called codominant stems, two trunks of relatively equal size. I anticipate we'll see a few more failures than we typically see. I'm not seeing any red flags from the street side that would have warranted a closer look, unfortunately, until this failure occurred.
So, in other words, this stuff just kind of happens. This is not a at least in this specific case, this is not specifically a result of a lack of attention from Seattle Parks and Recreation. This is just something that happens. And he says, hey, you know what? Probably what ended up happening is we had some snow last winter that we don't normally get, and that probably played a little bit of a role in why this tree fell. They say the remaining part of the tree that did not fall might have to be pruned or could be removed completely. And, you know, it's one of those cases of crazy things just happen. And you can try really, really hard to avoid things and realize at some point it's completely futile, right? I mean, tree branches fall. Bad things happen. And the good news is, for the most part, people aren't directly impacted. But every once in a while, it's just this is just bad luck. And it kind of sucks, and in a lot of ways, I get freaked out when I think about things like that, that where, you know, I could just walk down the street, across the street, and just bad luck, a bus driver doesn't realize that I'm walking and hits me. Like, this stuff just kind of happens, and you mitigate it as best as humanly possible. But the fact of the matter is, bad things sometimes happen due to bad luck. and that's what this appears to be. I would love to be able to go out and say the Seattle Public Parks Department, they don't know what it is they're doing, they're not paying attention, which also might be the case, but at least in this particular case, it's not. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
Southbound I-5 pretty slammed from Lake City Way coming through downtown Seattle towards the West Seattle Bridge, and then off and on slowing as you make your way into Tacoma. Federal Way to Tacoma right now is a little over a 40-minute drive, and you'll see some slowing on both directions of I-5 at City Center in Tacoma. Thank you for thinking about your safety after a fun day at the fair. By making a plan before you go out, you're making the road safer for everyone. Have a good time and drive safely. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
I know I feel scared and I feel alone.
Oh, did we trigger you? The future of conservative talk radio is here.
All of us are tired of the actions of the Seattle City Council and the little swamp in Olympia.
It's the Saul Spady Show. Weekday mornings, 6 to 9.
I think there is no problem we cannot solve as a state.
Jason Rantz from 3 to 6.
I want you to get mad that we've allowed our leaders to let things get this bad without having any sense of urgency in attacking the problem.
On AM 770 KTTH.
Jason Rantz here for the Online Trading Academy. Here's the deal. You should probably attend a free power trading workshop to find out about their rules-based approach to the stock market. Because like you, I noticed that today the Dow Jones did not do so well. In fact, it did pretty poorly. Now, for a lot of you, you say, okay, you know, this sort of stuff happens every once in a while. You just, you wait it out. It corrects itself. And for the most part, that's true. Except when you look at history. History tells us we are in for a significant downturn in the economy, and we're going to start seeing a lot more of these days where the Dow Jones is not doing well. And you're going to be looking at your own stock portfolio. You're going to be looking at your 401k and realize, yeah, maybe I should have a plan. Well, the good news is we can teach you a plan with a free power trading workshop. You can find out for yourself if you think their program is going to work for you. Because the truth of the matter is, it takes a lot. You're going to have to attend classes. You're going to have buy-in from your spouse or significant other if you're going to enroll in the Online Trading Academy. They don't want to make it that easy. They want to make sure that you're committed to learning the rules. And let me tell you, for the people who are committed to learning the rules, they're seeing results. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 72000. And you can register for your choice of workshop dates in Bellevue or an upcoming workshop in Everett on Thursday, September 5th. So that's coming up in just 2 days. Text R-A-N-T-Z to the number 72000 and sign up today for your free upcoming workshop.
Time for today's edition of Growing Your Wealth, presented by Madrona Financial. Here's Brian Evans.
I've been hearing a lot of different investment advisors because of the market volatility and low interest rates. A lot of people, you know, we're getting older. Baby boomers are getting older. They want some guaranteed cash flow for life. They want to make sure some of their portfolio can't go down. Some of the investment shows on the weekend talk about these strategies. They aren't strategies. They're products sold by insurance licensed people. They're fixed index annuities or fixed annuities. So that's what they are, to get the gains of the market without the downside risk. Now, some of the things I wanted to point out, though, some of the things I've heard from other advisors which lack transparency might be, you know, they might say, give you an example. Let's say that the market went up 10%. You got 10%, your fixed index annuity the first year, and the next year it went up another 10. You got another 10 on top of that. Now you're up 21% compounded. Well, let me tell you, I've never seen that happen in my career, where you have two double-digit increases in a year in a fixed index annuity. Fixed index annuities are designed to protect your principal. They're designed not to go down if the market goes down. They're not designed to go up a whole bunch. They're designed to meet or beat inflation. That is what they're for. That can be a very good thing.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local, really simple to understand. The media here is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up ignoring a lot of stories that are happening in the communities you live in and care about most. And so we do the opposite. We ignore Seattle, and we spend all of our time on you. We start in the city of Kirkland because they're starting a pilot program to take away money from drivers, all under this guise of protecting children. Oh, won't somebody think of the kids? So they've set up a school zone speed enforcement camera system. It started today. You'll find them outside of John Muir Elementary, Kamiakin Middle School, and Rose Hill Elementary School, because they are particular areas in the city of Kirkland that see the highest traffic volumes or instances of speeding. So now they're going to ticket you for speeding or running a red and happily collect the cash, all while pretending that you're really a danger. You're a huge danger to all the kids there. They're going to operate 30 minutes before and after the start of school, and then 30 minutes before and after the end of the school day. Now, they say warnings will be issued for the first 30 days, and then citations will begin for people who are driving over the 25-mile-per-hour speed limit. You'll get hit with a $136 ticket per incident and a $250 per incident for speeds over 30 miles per hour. The speed limit in the school zone is 20 miles per hour. City Manager Kurt Triplett tells Cairo 7 TV that this is actually going to help all the police officers out there.
We have 19 schools in Kirkland, and each one of them has some sort of speeding problem to some degree. But we only have 5 traffic officers, so our current traffic officers can't be everywhere all at the same time.
Okay, I hear you. I see what you're saying. I have a question. You've chosen these 3 particular schools because they see the highest instances of either people driving too fast or other types of quote-unquote unsafe driving. Why not have the cops there? Why aren't you putting the cops at these particular spaces? This is all about helping cops. Totally get it. Wouldn't you then put the speeding cameras at the schools that aren't the highest trafficked out there and focus the actual police? Because if your intention here is to cut down on this kind of behavior because it's unsafe, God forbid a speeding car were to hit a kid who's just walking across the street trying to get to school, wouldn't a cop being there do a better job than a little sign that says you've got a camera system there? Or, now wait for it, this isn't really about safety. This is about ticketing people because you realize when you've got more cars there, there's a higher potential of revenue coming into the city of Kirkland. Oh, I think I just figured it out. That's really what this is about. If you've got this grand concern that people's lives are on the line, kids' safety is at risk here, then you put the police there. That actually gets people to stop. That gets people to slow down. What do you do when you're driving around town, whether you're in Kirkland or Squim, and you see a cop nearby? You slow down. You drive very, very slowly and cautiously, and you're constantly looking to make sure the officer isn't catching up to you and speeding up behind you, because generally that means they're about to put on their sirens and pull you over. You make sure you've got your hands on the steering wheel, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, even though most of us drive with just one hand. Oh, you're super attentive. You're maybe even turning down the KTTH stream on your phone or on your radio just so everything, you're aware of everything. So why not have a cop there? This is not about safety. And if this was truly about safety, if they had data to back this up, that you've got kids being hurt, they're going to do more than just put up a system. What happens when you get a ticket? What does that mean? It means you had already committed the crime of going faster than the 20 mile per hour zone. So this isn't proactive. This is after the fact, right? This is retroactive. Proactive is having a cop there. And that's really what would happen if this was all about safety. Meanwhile, speaking of kids in schools, this is kind of an alarming case. It's happening out in South Whidbey. It's a 15-year-old boy who is passing around nude photos of a female student. Now, he just pled guilty to a deferred disposition of disclosing intimate images of a person under 18. So what does deferred disposition mean? It's really simple. It basically says that the courts will essentially drop all the charges against the kid in a year, so long as the kid actually follows the conditions set forward by the court. Now, at first, I was looking at this, I was like, okay, this is a little overkill, right? This goes a little bit too far. I expect a 15-year-old boy is going to do something like this. I expect, frankly, a 15-year-old girl going to do the exact same thing. This is why we tell kids, don't take nude photos. They're going to get around. Kids do really stupid things, and they don't think about the impact something like spreading someone's nude photos around would have on that person. But do I really want them to go to a court system, get them in the judicial system? Then I read the facts of the case, and now I'm actually taking the opposite position. I'm wondering if we've got a legitimate sociopath and we're letting him go lightly by giving him this deferred position in the court, because the details are insane. So the story actually comes from the South Whidbey Record, and they say the boy is a former student at South Whidbey Middle School. He was uncooperative. He thought it was all a joke. he apparently, and this is where it's really crazy, he coerced one of the girls not just into sending him the photo, but according to the mother of one of the victims, blackmailed the girl into doing what she was told. That's a direct quote coming from the court case. The blackmailed part? That's not normal behavior of a 15-year-old kid unless they happen to be a sociopath. Now, it doesn't say what the girl was supposed to do according to the blackmail. It didn't get into that. But it did say that this poor girl who was going through this, she was obviously deeply traumatized. She wasn't hanging out with friends anymore. She wasn't really socializing at all. She was dealing with this debilitating anxiety, which is something that you would expect when dealing with a sociopath like this. This is not simply a dumb decision by a 15-year-old kid. This is predatory and alarming. Do we really want to let this kid go in a year if he decides to follow up? What does he have to do? Supervision by a probation counselor, 100 hours of community service, and then mental health treatment if recommended after an assessment. If recommended. This is insane to me. Maybe he's a sociopath and he didn't take this all seriously because he lacks empathy. And if you've got someone who lacks empathy and doesn't really understand why this is a big deal, you're going to deal with this kid at some point down the line. So this actually was super alarming to me. And then finally, there was a lot of excitement today. Yay. There's a groundbreaking ceremony for the light rail extension project to Lynnwood. It's an 8.5-mile extension. It starts in the city that we don't talk about during this segment. And it's going to end in Lynnwood. It's supposed to be done by 2024. The mayor of Lynnwood, Nicola Smith, says it's going to bring a whole lot of new business to the area.
Lynnwood Link will bring fast and reliable light rail service to Lynnwood. And when paired with expanded services from our partner community transit, Lynnwood will be a significant transit hub, providing fast and reliable connections for the people of Lynnwood, Snohomish County, and our entire region.
Okay. This whole project is about $500 million over budget. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there as we all have this excitement and cheers. I guess the governor was down there to do the first shoveling into the ground to talk about the groundbreaking of this. We're about $500 million over budget right now. And I say right now because that's an important part. We're going to be way more over budget. Are we celebrating that part, too? And can we at least acknowledge that when they say it's going to be open by 2024, that's also probably not going to happen? So the origin part in the city that we don't talk about during this segment, I believe it was supposed to already be open. Now they're saying it's going to be open in 2021. That, too, is over budget and over schedule. Now, to be fair to Sound Transit, they say it's not over budget or over schedule because they go back and they revise the schedule after putting it out there, and then they revise the budget after putting it out there, and then says, actually, no, we're totally on time. We just edited it. Well, yeah, but that's not on time anymore. That means you're just changing your schedule now. You're over. Oh, no, we changed it. No, I got that, but you changed it because you already went past it.
Hey, I'm going to begin doing that with all my work, and
this is really
I'm
going to
tell you it's going to be done at a certain time, and then I'm going to send you something,
yeah,
but I'm going to change it all like an hour later.
Yeah, after I say this is crap, and then you redo it, and they go, what are you talking about? I did it.
Yeah, it's all done.
Like, no, you didn't do it. You just redid it. That's how like life works. No celebration in that regard. So we'll see when this thing actually gets done. I love the idea of light rail. I know a lot of folks in Snohomish County are excited because it's getting closer and closer to Everett and Marysville and Mukilteo and that general area to actually enjoy this. I can't wait until it gets into Pierce County, but I'm probably going to have to wait because none of these projects ever go according to plan. And you would think at some point they might sort of under or over promises or under promise, excuse me, and then over deliver, meaning, oh, we'll get to it. It'll probably be done best case 2030. And then it actually gets done in 2025, which is a year past the way they currently say it. And then everyone's going to look, oh, well, you told us 2030. Why not just give us the worst case scenario and then let us be pleasantly surprised that you got done early? Because it's just all it's doing is creating a narrative. That's literally all it's doing. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. It's an unbetter tax resolution hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. There's a fight happening in Ballard over a pea patch. And it's actually very similar to sort of at least the basic concept of a fight that's going on in Tacoma, where they're trying to raise something like $20 million to save a 100-year-old church. In this case, we're talking about a church that owns the property that this pea patch currently resides. It's valued at a little under $2 million, so a lot different than the valuation of the church property. They would like, the church would like to sell it to a developer. The developer has plans to build 4 townhomes in this particular spot. And some community members who really appreciate the pea patch and what it means to the community, they're obviously upset with this particular plan. And so one spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
Neighborhoods are sustained by the positiveness of these type of spaces.
Well,
if we take the spaces away, we denigrate our environment.
I mean, I hear what he's saying. I think there's a little bit of hyperbole there. Ballard is going to exist whether or not we have this pea patch. It's not hanging on by a thread. And if not for the pea patch and what it brings to the community and the 1,500 or so pounds of vegetables that it produces every single year, I don't think Ballard is going to go anywhere anytime soon. But you know what? You can also look at this and say, well, we do, I'm told, have a housing crisis, right? This would bring 4 new housing units to this particular neighborhood that's already dealing with high rents because of a lack of apartment complexes and homes available for rent or purchase. Obviously, what comes with the construction is not just housing, but jobs for people who presumably work in the area. So there are clearly some pros to all of this, despite the negative that you would be getting rid of this green space. I get it. And actually, I think the church in this case is handling things really, really effectively. Look, they're saying we need the money. We're doing this for financial reasons. Now, if you want to come up with the money for $2 million, we'll give you 6 months to go ahead and come up with the money, and we'll happily give it to you instead of to the developers. If you truly care about this piece of land, okay, fine, pay for it. I think the church is doing things in the most reasonable way. If you really care about it, then raise the money and own the property. Now, I'm not entirely sure I know how logistically this would work out for them, right? If an organization ends up raising the money, is it under a corporation now that owns the property? Are you paying the taxes on it? Are you equipped to do stuff like that? I don't know. But if you care about this deeply in your community, cool, put up the money. Because what's not fair is putting on pressure, whether we're talking about a church or a private citizen, to not do with the property what they want to do with that property. They get to do whatever it is they want along, as long as they're actually following the law. Meanwhile, a monumentally stupid measure just passed the Seattle City Council. And really, that's kind of, I can just say that they passed a bill and you would already know that it's spectacularly stupid. They now require all new paving projects over $1 million to include protected bike lanes. So, in other words, they're saying even in scenarios in which not a single bicyclist would ever bike down, you now have to add the cost of not just a bike lane, but a protected bike lane. This is absolutely ludicrous. Councilmember Mike O'Brien, who is so deeply unpopular in Ballard that he's not running for re-election, he said, this ordinance is really directed towards safety for bicyclists in our city. By the way, bicycling in the city is not keeping up with population growth. As a percentage of commuters, it's been going down for the last 8 to 10 years. Just throwing that out, just so people know. He then says it's intended to ensure we uphold the commitments we've made to build the facilities that have been laid out in the Move Seattle levy. They say the measure applies to any major paving project along a segment of the protected bicycle lane network, but not regularly scheduled maintenance or repairs. So in other words, they passed a plan a long time ago that was never really realistic to add all these bicycle lanes. People have changed their patterns over the last several years since that bicycle master plan network went forward. People have not decided to bike in any meaningful numbers to justify spending money on these projects. And now we're saying, oh, you know, forget about the new data and the new context. Just go ahead and build the bike lanes because, you know, if you build it, people will come. Yeah, fair that people haven't come as we continue to put tens of millions of dollars into bike lanes and actually bike lane use has gone down since we've built it. But still, you know, if you build more of it, people will come. You've hit a peak in the city of Seattle as to the amount of people who are going to commute to work via bike. That peak is there because what do we have in Seattle? Lots of hills, lots of wet stuff. And both of those combined makes for a very unhappy and maddening commute, whether or not you've got a protected bike lane. It seems to me the data suggests that a lot more people in this area are taking the bus. I would understand putting more changes in infrastructure to get people around via metro or via light rail. That makes sense to me because the data actually backs that up. As much as the bike people love to call me anti-bike, I'm not anti-bike. Yes, I'm pro-car, the same way I'm pro-bus, the same way I'm pro-pedestrian, the same way, in a lot of cases, I'm also pro-bicyclist. I'm pro-getting people to where they need to go in an efficient way possible. And when you add bike lanes that are not being used, that end up having a negative impact on traffic, both the bus and on drivers, I'm going to stand up very proudly and say, really? This is where we want to put our money? This doesn't make sense. I thought all of us were in a position where we wanted to get people to and from their location as quickly as possible. But are we not about that anymore? Because you do understand that when you put up these bike lanes that no one uses, that makes car traffic and bus traffic worse. You're keeping those cars on the road idling by for much longer, which I'm told is bad for the environment. Prince Harry tells me so. Mike O'Brien has told me so. But so long as we get the bicycle hobbyist to get to point A from point B to point A, okay, we're cool. Okay, got it. So we're really hyper serving a group of people that pay the least into the economy. Because when you're driving a car, you actually have to pay for your car tab fees, right? You're paying a tax to drive here. Bicyclists don't pay a bike tax. But you know, some bicyclists, they also own cars. Oh, congratulations. But a car can't actually use the bike lane, only a bicyclist can. So it makes sense to me, as you're talking about congestion pricing, as you're talking about pay by the mile, it makes sense to me that the bicyclist is also paying a tax on their bike that goes into these ridiculous projects since only they are the ones using them. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. One more hour coming up.